Have you ever had a friendship that felt one-sided? One in which all you did was give, give, give. And maybe you're constantly helping out, maybe you're going the extra mile, giving advice, pouring into someone. And at first it feels really good, right? Like you're really helping someone in need, you know? And then as time goes on, you begin to realize that actually this relationship really lacks depth. Perhaps you feel tired. Maybe you've even felt a little used. You begin to realize that this person was really a bottomless pit of needs, and there was no way for your friendship to actually evolve into a healthy, satisfying relationship. Or maybe you were friends with a person who was always caring for you, on the flip side of it, and as a result, never showed signs of need in their life. Maybe they were available to help you, but it seemed like they never really needed any help in their own life. This person had an issue maybe with vulnerability, and it made you feel like a project and not a participant in the relationship. I think we've all had these types of relationships in our lives, right? But great relationships are really built on the opposite idea. They're built on the idea of a two-way street. And at the end of the day, no one wants to feel like a project, as we've talked about. But this can be the biggest temptation when it comes to feeling like a good neighbor. Like, maybe you feel like you have to be the one to put on a cape and save the day and go in. And maybe until now, this series has actually given you the impression that in order to be a great neighbor, you have to know everyone's name. You have to rush around to meet their needs or look for opportunities to help. And while none of these things are bad, if they are all we think amounts to good neighboring, the two-way value of our relationships in neighboring ends up feeling undermined and empty. And so today I want to talk about, in this series, the art of receiving. The art of receiving. See, allowing ourselves to be on the receiving end of things is a lot harder than it may look. It's a lot harder than it may sound, because our tendency is to put ourselves in positions of control and power. In this case, always being the one to give. And often we want to give the impression that we aren't needy, that we don't have needs, that we have enough, that we have resources, that we're capable. We don't want to be seen as the one that doesn't have the answers, because that would make us look weak. But being in a good relationship where we allow others to meet our needs is actually a really good thing. Guys, I'm like right there with you trying to figure this out and learn this today. Being a good neighbor is actually built upon the premise of a healthy balance of both giving and receiving. And I take that even a further step to say, if we aren't willing to let others meet our needs, we may be severely limiting what God wants to do in our neighborhoods and in our lives. I think we could be limiting him big time. Now, you gotta know this about me. I like to mow my lawn a certain way, okay? So when my neighbor offers to mow my lawn, because I'm going on vacation, it's very reasonable. I'm going on vacation, it's gonna be sitting for a while. My first reaction, gut's instinct reaction, is to say, no, that's okay, you know? No, that won't be necessary. I think that's kind of what we all say, right? But because I was going out of town and because I knew the grass was gonna grow out of control, it was perfectly fine. And so I actually relented and he mowed. Not the way I would have done it, but he did it the way that he thought he should. And he mowed my lawn, and it was super helpful, super kind as a neighbor to offer that. There's something about allowing others to meet our needs, as uncomfortable as it may be for you to receive that. I want to read out of a passage in Luke chapter 7 today. And so if you have a Bible, this would be a great time to grab that. And if you don't, you're out of luck. Just kidding. It's going to be up on the screen. And we do have paper Bibles to your left over on the sidewall. You can grab one of those. And I'm going to actually be reading out of the ESV. Luke chapter 7, verse 36. We're going to start there. And if you do grab one of those Bibles on the sidewall, it's page 864. This is Luke chapter 7, starting at verse 36. It says this: "One of the Pharisees asked him to eat with him, and he went into the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. And behold, a woman of the city who was a sinner, when she learned that he was reclining at the table in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster flask of ointment. And standing behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears and wiped them with the hair of her head and kissed his feet and anointed them with the ointment. Now when the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, 'If this man were a prophet, he would have known who and what sort of woman this is who is touching him, for she is a sinner.' And Jesus answering said to him, 'Simon, I have something to say to you.' And he answered, 'Say it, teacher.' A certain moneylender had two debtors. One owed 500 denarii and the other 50. When they could not pay, he canceled the debt of both. Now, which of them will love him more?" Simon answered, "The one, I suppose, for whom he canceled the larger debt." I'm not giving a pause for effect. I lost my spot. And he said to him, "You have judged rightly." Then turning toward the woman, he said to Simon, "Do you see this woman? I entered your house. You gave me no water for my feet, but she has wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You gave me no kiss, but from the time I came in, she has not ceased to kiss my feet. You did not anoint my head with oil, but she has anointed my feet with ointment. Therefore, I tell you, her sins, which are many, are forgiven. For she loved much, but he who is forgiven little loves little." He said to her, "Your sins are forgiven." Then those who were at the table with him began to say among themselves, "Who is this? Who even forgives sins?" And he said to the woman, "Your faith has saved you. Go in peace." Pretty powerful story. In Luke chapter 7, one of the Pharisees has invited Jesus to have dinner with him. And while there, a woman, as described as a woman of the city who was a sinner, translation, she was a prostitute, learned that Jesus was at this house. So what did she do? She brought a really expensive jar of perfume, and she poured it on Jesus' feet. It says that she wiped Jesus' feet with her tears, with her hair. The item that she had once used to attract the other attention of men was now being used to worship the Son of Man. Can you imagine what it would have been like if Jesus had rejected her offer? Think about it for a second. Jesus, the Son of God. He didn't do this. He allowed her to serve him. He actually went so far as to defend her and said that the way she was worshiping rivaled the worship of the religious leaders who were present in the room. These were people that knew the law, okay? They studied for years. Think about the art of receiving from Jesus' perspective for a minute. See, I doubt that Jesus was in any great need of a foot washing or a special perfume treatment that day. I don't think that's exactly what he needed. It wasn't necessary that he needed this at this party, but it's what the woman had to offer him that day. In fact, it was all that she had. And he received it willingly because he knew that his willingness to receive this gift would mean everything to her. It wasn't that Jesus had need. It's that he received what she had to give in order to make himself known to her. That just blows my mind. The one who came to give everything for us was also willing to receive something from us. Jesus practiced the art of receiving. How about you? Are you able to receive what somebody has to give to you? Are you able to receive? It's really hard for us, especially in the culture that we live in, to readily accept or receive something from somebody else. But here's what I want to say. If you have a hard time, like me, in receiving, just naturally, it's likely that you will have a hard time believing the gospel. Why? Because the gospel is all about receiving something that you don't have. It's all about receiving something that you can't attain on your own. That's why it was so difficult for me to really believe the gospel for years. Because I believed in my head, based on how I grew up and the lens by which I saw the world, that somehow I needed to earn what God would give freely to me. I had a problem with receiving. And like so many of us, we have an issue of receiving, but being on the receiving end is just as important as being on the giving end when it comes to good neighboring. So how do we begin to practice this art of receiving? How do we do this? I mean, it's difficult. It's challenging. Some of us have backgrounds that really mess with this. They don't allow us. I think the first thing that we need to recognize, probably the most important thing to recognize in terms of putting ourselves in a posture of receiving, especially what Jesus has to give us, and then when it comes to being good neighbors, receiving from our neighbors, is that we need humility. We need humility. Receiving starts with the realization that you do not possess all the skills or the resources or the tools necessary to live a complete life. It's just like the gospel. You don't have what it takes. Jesus does. And Jesus gives you what it takes. You didn't muster it up. You did not pull yourself up by your bootstraps to achieve it. Jesus gave it so that you could have what you need. So it starts with an acknowledgement in our lives that we are in need. We do this with Jesus, and we should do this as neighbors. That we have a need, that we have needs, and that maybe God wants to use somebody else to meet those. Maybe, just maybe. Like I said, this is difficult because many of us have been taught from an early age not to be in someone else's debt. Many of us probably feel that if someone gives you something, you'll owe them back. I know that I feel this way like every time I get like a Christmas card, you know, like a really nice family Christmas card. I think our family hasn't done Christmas cards like, you know, the ones where you take pictures and send them to everybody and all that stuff. Probably in the last 3 years. Daniel would be so embarrassed right now that I'm telling you this, but you get them and then you feel guilty because you're not sending them out. Or how about that person that gives you an unexpected birthday gift? And you're like, you don't, I didn't get you a gift. You know, what am I going to do now? You know, maybe you pay for lunch for somebody and then like next month you owe me, like you get it next time. You know, that's just a nice gesture. But sometimes we feel guilty, right? Like we've got to do something. Most of us here don't like asking someone else for help. Maybe that's you today. I know it's me. We don't like to ask for help. But when we receive something from someone else, it forces us to admit as one piece that we're in need, that we have needs. And when we allow others to provide for us, we are forced to acknowledge that we are needy. None of us have it all together. I love what Jonathan Edwards once said. He said, "We must view humility as one of the most essential things that characterizes Christianity." Humility is a big deal. Our perspective on humility can be radically changed, I think, when we think about the life of Jesus. By the very act of leaving heaven, coming to earth, taking on the form of a mere mortal man, he demonstrated ultimate humility. His whole life, Jesus' whole life was postured on this idea of being humble, being a humble king, a humble servant. And not only did he serve, because he did say that, the Son of Man came to, what? To serve, not be served, to give his life as a ransom for many. But he also, this is what blew my mind this week, thinking about all the ways that Jesus allowed other people to serve him and how he utilized this to proclaim who he was. He allowed others to serve him as an act of humility. And in the case of the woman in Luke chapter 7, Jesus could have refused, but he showed humility and he allowed her to serve him. In fact, even in this story, Jesus is protecting her dignity in a way. He's protecting her dignity by maintaining a posture of need towards this woman instead of saying, no, I have what I need. You don't have anything to give me. He protected her dignity. He went beyond just the idea of receiving from someone. So how could Jesus' example of humility make its way into your life today? How could Jesus' example of humility make its way into your neighborhoods today? Well, one of the things that I found, this is just on the super practicality side of just getting to know neighbors, right? No huge theological point here, just a practical at the ground level. One of the things that I found to be true about my neighbors and figuring out how I can serve and be served is by finding out what makes my neighbors tick. Finding out what they're knowledgeable or passionate about. I know right away in my neighborhood that I have a neighbor who is super passionate about baseball, right? Like they're gone a lot. For baseball, they're talking about baseball. Every time I get together, it's a conversation about baseball. It always makes its way back to baseball. They love baseball. Me, I could talk about the weather a little bit. I could be talking about music. I could be talking about... They love baseball, so it's baseball, and I know that. I have another neighbor that's really into he's a beekeeper. He likes to keep bees at his house. Which has had the adverse effect of bears showing up in our neighborhood. In fact, we have a little group. Facebook can be good for some stuff. We have like a closed group for our neighborhood. I was telling somebody earlier today. And I get alerts when there's bears in my neighborhood, you know? And, hey, I saw the bear last night at 9:40, you know? Just want to make sure all the kids are inside. Really helpful. Like, it's great. What makes your neighbors tick? What are they knowledgeable about? You know, figure out what current needs do you have that a neighbor might be able to help you with. That can be, I mean, I know, this takes a risk and some vulnerability, knowing that you have needs and then being vulnerable to share what those might be or in the moment what those could be and how that neighbor could help you. How can you enter into their world and allow them to serve you? That sounds super counterculture, right? Like, how do we allow our neighbors to serve us? It's just something about that just rubs me the wrong way. Like, it's just so anti what I'm programmed to think or to feel. Yet Jesus gives us the example that this is what he did for us. He allowed us to serve him. Now, I think authenticity when it comes to being a good neighbor is crucial. Like, you may be tempted to think right now, well, you know, I'm going to just create an artificial situation so that I can interact with my neighbors. I really want to do this. I really want to allow my neighbors to serve me. So you might find yourself thinking, I haven't seen Tom in a while, but maybe I should go over and ask if he has any sugar. When I have sugar at home, I don't need any, but I just want to see if he's around, you know? Hey, Tom, can you lend me some sugar? No. That's not what I'm talking about. Like, don't do that. That's a bad idea. For starters, I think it lacks integrity. And it might be dishonest. And we talked about last week how motives matter, right? People can see right through false humility, by the way. One of my favorite stories about this is, you know, there was a church that I was involved at for a long time in Pennsylvania with my wife. And our first child was born there. And I remember the ongoing joke happened because of a situation we had with our music team. And I was really involved with our music team at that church. And I just remember, like, somebody on our team was getting compliments every single week about how good they were. like people would be like, oh, man, today was amazing. You know, thank you so much. You know, oddly enough, it was never about how good Jesus was. It was about how good they did. And so that kind of rubbed me the wrong way until one day. when somebody said, you know, to this person, they said, you know, oh man, it was so good today. Thank you so much. And this person generally would always say, oh, it's all God. You know, it's all God. None of me, all of you. You know, and he would go through that several times until one day when I heard somebody say, you know, this person said to him, he's like, oh man, it was so good today. Thank you so much for leading. It was spectacular. And the guy's like, well, it was all God. It was all God. And the guy like looked at him for a second. And he's like, well, it wasn't that good. It wasn't that good. It wasn't all God. Anyway, I know it's early, guys, but people can smell false humility a mile away. So in your attempt to receive, I would encourage you to do this. Be genuine in your need. Don't force that to happen. Real opportunities to serve and be served will come up in your life. This was a natural situation that Jesus was in. He had gotten invited to a party. He was there already. This woman made her way to it. And during the course of their time together, he found a natural opportunity to let this woman serve him. It wasn't something he forced or pushed to happen. It just came up. So Jesus, I would say, is showing us just awareness. Being aware of the times that we can allow other people to serve us. I think this will do a couple things. I think, it will allow us to create a two-way street with someone. It will allow us to have a two-way street of a relationship, and it will give the real sense, I think, with somebody who's your neighbor, that we're in this together. Like, we're better together. This past winter, I allowed my other neighbor, my baseball neighbor, to help me shovel some snow that had built up around my driveway. And it was really strange because I don't know how this happened, but like we got a lot of snow last year, right? And last winter. And I just remember endless shoveling, right? Until one day I got so fed up with it. And like, you know, I love the winter and I'm good for the first like 3-4 times of shoveling. But like beyond that, I'm like, okay, this is getting a little old now. So we bought a snowblower this year. And like, I grew up in New England and like, I didn't even know what it was, you know, until I bought one. Because we were just shoveling, you know, growing up, I remember shoveling my grandfather's roof off. And like, back when you were a kid in New England, you used to think snowbanks got like as high as the telephone poles every year, every winter. And some years now, it's like we get a ton of snow. But anyway, my driveway got like super blocked in. Like I let the snow kind of like get really high, and I would just like not walk very far. It was like actually the fruit of my laziness. You could see. I would just pile it in one spot until my driveway opening was like, you know, maybe like 6 or 7 feet across. And you could hardly get one car in the driveway, and we have a two-car garage, so that was a problem. So my neighbor noticed this, right? I'm out one night, and it's like freezing cold winter night, and I'm like shoveling away, I'm picking away at the ice at this point, right? And my neighbor, he came over, and he jumped right in. He didn't even ask me. He's like, he just jumped right in, and he started shoveling, picking away at this ice to make the driveway a little bit more wide so we could get in. And I know that sounds like a simple act of kindness, and it was, certainly was for my neighbor, but I can tell you right now that it brought us closer together. Like there was a bond that took place that winter night because my neighbor selflessly gave himself up to serve me, and I allowed him to do it. I allowed him. I received it. So if the goal is to love your neighbor, sometimes the most important thing you can do is allow them to serve you. Counterculture, absolutely. But if we as a church are serious about living out the way of Jesus in all of life, which is what we are, then this will be counterculture. This idea of receiving. And I believe as a community that we are called to do this. I mean, Jesus gives us the example. It rails against our American westernized culture understanding. I totally understand. So many things that Jesus has to say that are life-changing and transformational are absolutely against the grain of our Western culture. Absolutely. So the faster we understand that, the quicker we will be more apt to be a community that's looking to serve him, not ourselves.
That's good.
The art of receiving isn't that complicated, if you really think about it. It comes down to being aware of your needs and looking for opportunities to ask and to receive. To ask and to receive. Admitting that you don't have everything. Good neighboring isn't about doing charity work as well. It's about empowering people. Jesus empowered that woman at that party. He didn't have to. He could have totally refused her, but there's so many things that happened as a result of him allowing her to serve him. And one of them is that he empowered her that day. I can't imagine that woman leaving that party being the same. I think she was changed forever, knowing that Jesus, the Son of Man, is allowing her to serve him. It's about empowering people and breaking down the walls which build this sense of community that we're talking about, being good neighbors, loving your neighbor as yourself. Jesus did this with us. So I want you to be encouraged today, and I want you to be intentional about the art of receiving with others. If Jesus does it with you and me, we can do it with other people. If the gospel is receiving what we don't have, then allowing others to serve us is part of what the gospel implies.